This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening. It's the evening edition. You're with Richard, Uma, and Ezra. And we have another episode of Truth or Cheater Rock and Roll. And this month, we're featuring AC/DC, Akadaka, that band that wears black a lot, I guess.
And shorts.
And shorts.
Yeah, school uniforms.
Very, very cool school uniform.
They've been around for quite some time, 17 albums out. They are number 4 of the biggest selling albums of all time, having sold over 40 million albums.
Yeah, they've done all right.
They've not done too bad at all. I mean, let's be fair. I mean, you've got Michael Jackson just above them. You know, they come in at number 4. I mean, and a hard rock band at that, to be scoring that amount of records.
And of course, wow. AC/DC is one of those bands that has a signature sound. It's a straight up, you know, rock. It's got screeching vocals. It's got great riffs. Very straightforward drum beats. But it's one of those that will constantly be in a soundtrack of a movie, which of course we can get into later with AC/DC. Just a great, great band.
But it's interesting to note that, you know, unlike a lot of the other stories we've covered, with be it George Harrison, Jimi Hendrix. Have we done Hendrix?
No, we haven't.
We've done Bob Marley.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of the other bands and stories and Charita rock and roll have had, you know, controversy and a craziness to them. AC/DC has just put the nose to the grind, done their job, made entertaining music, and made a ton of money. That's the word I was looking for. A ton of money, right? And I think there is something to be said about that.
I think that is the Charita, though, right? It is... The very fact that they've just made straight up rock and roll for the past 40 odd years, and there's only a real small portion of their career where there is this mysterious story,
some sort of drama,
whereas, as like you say, all they've done is just made music that sells out stadiums. Like 500,000 people in Toronto go to see them and the Rolling Stones.
And of course, you know, we've been so mature about this whole discussion that we even haven't mentioned the fact that they're from Australia.
Correct.
Yeah. So, I mean, kudos
to
them.
Do we have to?
Well, technically, they're Scottish immigrants to Australia.
Wow. Now,
oh, Rich, I love that. You're just going straight to, you know what, there are United Kingdom roots.
For all of the members, I should add, yeah.
Now, of course, there's a bit of history to them in terms of when they were formed. They were formed in 1973, Rich?
That's right, yeah. 1973 by guitarist Malcolm Young with his brother Angus Young. This is after their previous band, The Velvet Underground.
No relation.
Of course, that collapsed during 1973.
Now, Malcolm was writing and performing around the Sydney area to some degree. And of course, in an interview, Angus recalls heading over to his brother's bedroom to find out what he was listening to, only to be told to go away. You know, that's how elder brothers are. And of course, being, you know, quite guilty doing this to his younger sibling.
Which is why when Malcolm finally asked Angus to join the band he was developing, Angus was a little bit surprised.
Yeah. So Angus was lead guitarist, and they were playing some gigs around Sydney, and he's 15 years old at this stage, right? And he's appearing on stage, and he goes through a whole slew of different uniforms. He dresses up as a gorilla. He dresses up as Super Angus. All kinds of things. Up until later on, he develops this band's visual trademark, which, of course, is his school uniform. And it was Margaret who said, you should wear this school uniform because that'll be the thing that pulls them in. So we've got a little clip about with Angus when he first, you know, starts wearing this uniform and why.
14-year-old Angus was so eager to get into the guitar, he would never change out of his school uniform.
A lot of it was nerves at first. When I started in the band, I was pretty much shy. It was hard to get me to sort of push myself forward, yeah. But Malcolm and George always sort of said, no, get up the front and show people that you can play. And I think when I put on the school suit, I thought I had to be extrovert.
Angus on why he wears the uniform.
Which is funny because it's such a trademark image for the band.
Yeah, that is. Margaret, his sister, also helped them choose the name AC/DC after she'd seen the sign on a sewing machine. they liked the idea of it being related to power.
Right. Totally rock and roll. Sewing machines and school uniform.
Yeah, that's right.
But it's great, right, when you don't actually have a real story as to why you have that name. I mean, do you remember that story of why the Beatles are called the Beatles? Apparently, John Lennon used to say he heard it in a dream when it came to him on a flaming pie and someone said, you will be the Beatles, but with an A.
Right.
Wow. Mm. You know they were tripped up on something, right?
Even before they got famous. Now, AC/DC, the band, they moved to Melbourne the following year. And now this is where drummer Phil Rudd comes in and bassist Mark Evans.
I know you're a big fan of Phil Rudd, right?
Big fan of Phil Rudd, because if you're a drummer, if you're starting out learning drums, there are a couple of drummers you want to look at. Phil Rudd is definitely one of them. And, of course, Ian Paice from Deep Purple. These very simple hard rock drummers who would always make the beat that little bit fatter just by playing so simply. And so... The interesting thing about the band, of course, the band's chauffeur, Bon Scott, became the lead vocalist when singer Dave Evans refused to go on stage.
Yeah, he's not the only one who did that. Otis Redding as well. He was a
He was a driver,
He
yeah.
was a chauffeur and a driver for Johnny Jenkins and the Pine Troopers, you know. So when the recording time at Stax Studio wasn't going so well, Otis kind of came into the studio and said, you know what, do you mind if I just sing a little bit during this spare time? And of course he did, and with that spare time, he recorded These Arms of Mine, I mean, which is possibly one of the greatest soul records ever made. But there you go.
Wow. So Scott had also been the vocalist for the Australian prog rock bands Fraternity as well as The Valentines.
Yeah.
Now, apparently, Bon Scott's quite famous from his time in these two bands. The Valentines have been one of Australia's most famous bands in previous years. They had a bit of a following. There was a dual vocalist lineup situation going on in those bands. So when he started singing in a prog rock band, it was quite the departure. So we've got a clip here for, I guess, Bon Scott singing, and he's playing the recorder.
Yeah, he starts off playing the recorder.
And this is with Fraternity,
this
right?
This is with Fraternity, yeah. So I found this clip. It's from 1960-something, 67, something like that. And when you look at the stuff he's doing for the Valentines, and he's Build Me Up Buttercup, and then the next thing, he's got long hair and a beard, and he's playing the recorder. I'm like, I cannot believe this is Bon Scott.
Right, so this is Bon Scott with Fraternity singing Seasons of Change pre-AC/DC right here on Cheater Cheater Rock and Roll on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9. It's the Evening Edition. You're with Richard, Uma, and Ezra, and we're with Cheetah Cheetah Rock and Roll featuring AC/DC. And, of course, we just heard a clip of Bon Scott's prog rock bands, Fraternity, was it?
Yeah.
So now Bon, he helped cement the group's image as brutes. He had several convictions on minors' criminal offences. He was rejected by the Australian Army for being socially maladjusted, and of course AC/DC was socially maladjusted. Throughout their career, they favored crude double entendres and violent imagery, all spiked with a mischievous sense of fun.
That's right. A few years later, in an interview, Bon Scott was asked whether he was the AC or the DC. His response, neither, I'm the Lightning.
I love that quote. I absolutely love that quote, right?
That's a good one.
Yeah. I mean, when I read that, I'm like, oh, I could just imagine him saying it, having had like four whiskeys over a bar, you know. But anyway, they released two albums, High Voltage TNT in Australia in 74-75. Material from the two records comprised the 76 High Voltage in the US and the UK. They toured both countries. Dirty Deeds, Done Dirt Cheap followed at the end of the year. And in autumn of 77, they released Let There Be Rock, which became the first album to chart in the US. Mark Evans, he left the band. He was the bass player. Mm-hmm. Was replaced by Cliff Williams taking his place. Power Age, released in 78. They kind of expanded their audience a little bit further, thanks in no small part to their dynamic live shows, including Bon Scott dressing up as Alice in Wonderland. And then in 78, they released If You Want Blood, You've Got It.
Now, you know, what's great about, you know, some of the names of the albums that you've just mentioned, you know, the band is AC/DC.
Yeah.
They released the album called High Voltage and TNT.
And Power Age.
And Power Age. I mean, yeah. You know, you don't want to stray too far
right.
from the idea of the band.
Keep it thematic.
Correct. Right. And if you go through their back catalogue, the names of the songs, right, yeah. Even the names, it's rock and roll this, rock and roll that, rock this, rock that. Brilliant.
Now, what really broke the doors down for the band was the following year's Highway to Hell. It hit number 17 in the States, number 8 in the UK, and of course, it became the group's first million seller. It was a platinum hit.
But all was not well. Mm. You know, I love it when they do that. That kind of tone of voice in Masterpiece Theatre, but things changed. AC/DC's train was derailed when Bon Scott died on February 19th, 1980. The official coroner's report said he had drunk himself to death, but that's not what it seems either.
Yeah, we're going to have a chat about that a little bit later on, but right now this is the actual official radio announcement of the death of Bon Scott from the Australian Broadcasting Commission.
singer of the rock group AC/DC was found dead last night in a parked car in South London. Scotland Yard said the body of 30-year-old Bon Scott was discovered by a friend who had left him in the car hours earlier to sober up after a day's drinking. We talked to Rick Davies of Capital Radio in London, and he filed this report.
The friend who discovered Scott being unconscious, Alistair Kinnear, said that he met up with Bond to go to a music club in London, the Music Machine, last night, but he was pretty drunk when I picked him up. Then Scott apparently got there and they drank several more whiskeys. Scott's known for having been a heavy drinker, and also in 1973, when he was still in Australia, he was forced to stop singing for a while because of his drug problems. So yes, the suspicions are that this was the result of some heavy drinking.
And that was the death of one of the, what in my mind is one of the greatest Australian rock and rollers we've had over the past 10 years, and I'm talking about the lead singer of AC/DC, Bon Scott. Not only was he a friend of mine, and it shocked me deeply that he died in London, but I think it's a great blow to the Australian industry, and especially to AC/DC in the fact that the boys were breaking it so big in Europe and England and were about to become one of the world top supergroups in the world in 1980. The loss of Bon is something that you can't express because it's something personal within yourself. The only thing I can say is that I've known him for a long, long time. I knew him when he was in the Valentines in the 60s. He's always been one of the greatest showmen I've ever met. He had so much energy, and his loss, well, I just can't. I mean, what can you say?
What can you say indeed?
I think that pretty much summed it up in terms of the importance and, yeah, I guess, the timing of which he passed away.
Which is interesting because they were on the cusp of greatness but weren't quite there yet. That comes very, very soon, though, with the arrival of somebody else. Now, we're going to go into a break right now with a track. First up, it's AC/DC with Bon Scott singing on Ride on BFM 89.9.
Good evening, I'm Ezra Zayed.
And I'm Richard Bradbury.
And of course, joining us is Uma Pangan and Ambige Pangan on another episode of Treat Treat Rock and Roll featuring AC/DC.
Almost stumbled over my name there, didn't you?
Yes, we do try every once in a while. We've been talking about AC/DC, and of course, we left off at the demise of Bon Scott. And of course, what happens next in any other band, of course, is whether you decide to move on, and they do rather quite quickly with a new singer.
That's right, 2 months later. In March, the band replaced Scott with Brian Johnson. The following month, the band recorded Back in Black, which would prove to be its biggest album, selling over 10 million copies in the US alone.
I think we've heard about that album.
We may have heard about that.
Although, yeah, surprisingly, we don't play enough of that particular album on this radio station for some reason.
Or enough of AC/DC in general.
Indeed. Yeah, we will be soon.
I can guarantee that.
Now, we've got a kind of compilation clip here of a whole bunch of music journalists who were talking about, you know, how fast AC/DC went from the death of Bon Scott to getting Brian Johnson in, and people going, what the heck is happening? How could they possibly do this? So let's just have a listen.
Bon Scott sadly died in February 1980, and I think Brian Johnson was more or less in position by the end of March that particular year. So it was quite a quick sort of appointment as far as AC/DC were concerned. And I remember that the band being, you know, not fiercely criticised at the time, but there were a few eyebrows raised about, you know, the kind of haste in which they got in Bond's replacement.
Within 2 months, everything's done and dusted. They're down in NASA recording Back in Black. Maybe they threw themselves into the thick of it very quickly just to get over the grief. You don't know, but that, I mean, that's a startlingly short amount of time to go from losing your figurehead and, along with Angus, and best loved member of the band, just at the point where you're about to crack open the world market, to replacing him with someone completely new and recording your next album. 2 months. That's all it was.
Back in Black was the best way they really could have dealt with the new lineup. They had to come back in a very, very different manner to Highway to Hell, and they had to get a singer who was quite the opposite to Bon, but someone who could handle the material. And with Brian Johnson sort of archetypal screeching, screaming, unnaturally high-pitched vocal range, they probably did better than they could have done with anybody else.
See, I don't want to presume as to the band's mentality or how much they were mourning. But for me, that runs very in line with the way AC/DC operate. It goes back to what we're saying about nose to the grind, let's just make some music, right? I'm sure they felt a personal sense of loss. But at the end of the day, it's kind of symptomatic of their entire career. Let's just keep churning this stuff out and do what we do best.
Right.
But also a lot of bands in the 70s and the 80s who lost members. This is the modus operandi for a lot of bands. I mean, you had Cliff Burton dying in Metallica, you know, right in the midst of their big, big tour of Master of Puppets. You have Pearl Jam as an example.
Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing is whenever you listen to an interview with any members of AC/DC right now is the fact that when they talk about Bon Scott, they don't talk about him, you know, with emotion almost. It's like, oh, I remember Bon climbing on, you know, the spider's web at this stage. I remember him drinking 14 pints and then going on stage. And it's not like, oh, I remember how close we were as a band. It just seemed he was a stage in the band. We moved on. We did Back in Black. And the interesting thing about that album as well is that it's a new album with a new vocalist, and for the first minute and a half of that album, you don't hear a vocalist. You just hear music, and then you're like, what is this new vocalist going to sound like? Right. And then, of course, you know, Brian Johnson comes in, you're like, oh, that's a change.
So for the next few years, the band was one of the largest rock bands in the world with For Those About to Rock, We Salute You. Yet again, what a great title for a song. Topping the charts in the U.S. in 1983, Rudd would leave the band after recording Flick of the Switch. He was replaced by Simon Wright.
Yeah, he comes back a little bit later on. With Flick of the Switch, their commercial standing begins to slip a little bit, and they weren't able to kind of reverse this slide up until The Razor's Edge, which of course spawned the mammoth hit Thunderstruck. I'm waiting for somebody to slap the table. well, not the kind of commercial powerhouse they were doing during the late 70s and 80s. You know, the 90s saw AC/DC maintain their status as a top international concert draw in the fall of 95 with their 16th album, Ballbreaker.
Now, of course, this was produced by Rick Rubin. The album received a lot of positive reviews. Of course, you know, reflecting AC/DC's career, it entered the American charts at number 4, sold a million copies in the first 6 months of its release. Stiff Upper Lip, this is comes out in about early 2000, similar results. And of course, they signed a multi-album deal with Sony following year and resulted in, you know, just the usual stuff with great rock bands, reissues, DVDs. And yeah, they're just going on tour. And that's how they roll.
Now, they got thrown back into the public consciousness with, of course, Iron Man 2.
Yeah.
2 years later, the band's music was featured heavily in the motion picture. I think they did the soundtrack.
They did.
And, you know, released in conjunction with the film. I mean, that's what you need. You need a massive monster Marvel blockbuster, right?
Iron Man 2 OST by AC/DC. You know.
Correct.
Big fan of course, Jon Favreau was a big fan of the band. And that's what happened.
Forget about that. We're going to go back to Thunderstruck. Let's have a bit of that. This is AC/DC with Thunderstruck here on Treat Treat Rock and Roll on BFM 89.9.
It's the evening edition, and you're with Richard, Uma, and Ezra. And of course, we've been talking about AC/DC on this rendition of Treat Treat Rock and Roll. Of course, you know, the band, you know, as we've mentioned, it's one of the more simpler episodes in terms of retelling the band's history, their music, and of course, their impact on rock and roll history.
It is, yeah. So there was a period of time. Sorry about that. I'd got like Angus Young images in my head and like, you know, feet kicking and things. Anyway, so they go away for a little while, for about 8 years, where they don't really do a great deal of things. One of the guitarist is having an operation on his hand. Brian Johnson is having problems with his throat. So they have an 8-year hiatus as they're, you know, recording new stuff. And when they're coming back with Black as Ice, one of the Australian broadcasting companies goes to kind of cover the launch of the album and the launch of their sellout tour. And he just kind of goes backstage with the guys for like a couple of days. And we've got a few clips from that which kind of sound really nice.
The last 2 decades, just keep falling around. They've got grandkids now and they're still falling around. So.
And they know who they are.
Yeah. I love more, you know. I just like... And, you know, as I say, I like to be able to get out and play in front of people, you know, and have a good time. If you like what you're doing, then you're enjoying what you're doing. That's what keeps you going. You know, still get a big buzz out of it. You know, still get a, you know, I didn't join a rock and roll band, I think, to be famous. I joined to play my guitar. I still, to this day, I'm still learning. I mean, the first show sold out in 20 minutes, you know. And you know, just from that point on, it was... Of course, usually when you kick off a tour, you're a little bit shaky and everything, but it was like you never left. So that was... It was just good to get back in. So, I mean, that one really sticks out for me, just from kicking off.
5 minutes, fellas. 5 minutes, we'll start walking down. Takes 10 minutes to get to the stairs, doesn't it?
Angus worries a lot. Better get this right for the night, you know, and that's his pre-show nerves. But I watch him, you know, a couple of minutes before he goes on, he's ready. You know it's right. You know, and all the lads are, they. Everyone, once they get, we'll get together, we can shake it all.
Still get butterflies, you know, which is good. Yeah. You never take it for granted. You just pace back and forth, think of what you're going to do. You're so G'd up. That's about
you
it.
You hear him yodel a bit.
I got into the shower and have a yodel.
You can hear this sort of high-pitched scream.
Yeah. And of course, was that Brian?
It was,
just giving us a little
walking down the corridor to the stage.
I mean, if you're doing that night after night, I mean, certainly you would have some vocal problems.
Yeah, I mean, Mutt Lange, who recorded Back in Black, was saying that when they recorded that album, Brian was literally at the edge on every single song.
Yikes.
You know? And he'd be like, you know, can you just do that one more time? I don't know if I can, man. One more time.
I'm sorry.
I don't know if I can, man. That's his Geordie accent.
A bit Scottish.
Scottish and Irish mixed in there for good measure.
And that is what Geordie is. Magnificent. So, I mean, I don't know. What's your favorite AC/DC album? I mean, let's be simple about this.
Well, mine is quite simple because, you know, I grew up on the Back in Black album.
Right.
My brother was playing that riff. And it was so... I'm like... Because there's so much space.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, it was actually one of the most simplest songs that me and my brother could play. And it's such a simple thing. And it's one of the, especially the song itself, Back in Black, it escalates in terms of intensity, in terms of rawness, in terms of the power and the vocals that Brian delivers. Mm. I mean, notwithstanding the fact that he's just joined in the band, because usually it takes, you know, like football clubs sometimes, it takes time for a manager to integrate with a new club. It takes time for a new singer to integrate with a band.
Right.
This just takes place and, you know, with no hitches whatsoever.
Yeah.
AC/DC, however, made a very quick comeback.
That's right, they did.
Just saying. you know, it's the same with me. It was between Back in Black and Dirty Deeds, I think, two very cool albums. The first album of AC/DC I ever heard, the first song I ever heard was Back in Black, so that stands out as kind of having that impact. It's like, what is this?
Right. I mean, Back in Black for me is definitely up there, but I think I'm going to go out on a limb here and actually say that.
Go on then.
I think Highway to Hell
sure.
is my favorite album because it's the most naturally sounding perfect rock album. Because it's straight up rock and roll, but there's space, and the whole call and return from the two guitarists with that amount of space is perfect. And I don't mean to be detrimental to Metallica, right? But
I like how we have to clarify that with Ezra every time.
Because we already had a Metallica comment earlier on, so I'm gonna come back with this. So Metallica could play the album note for note.
Right.
And it would be perfect.
Mm.
But it wouldn't be AC/DC.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's just that... I don't know. It's a different kind
that
of
That sounds
energy.
Like a sentence that would make sense.
Ezra's fanboyness is preventing him from actually agreeing with you.
Right.
Can we talk about Scott's death, though?
Yeah, we should.
So, Bon Scott died in England under very mysterious circumstances, mm-hmm. right? And what's interesting about, I guess, the controversy, if you will, I mean, there's all rock star deaths have some amount of controversy, or you know, whether it's mysterious circumstances or just terrible circumstances. Mm. Bon Scott's death, however, the story seems to have changed so many times from different so-called eyewitnesses that there hasn't been a definitive answer as to why or how
and
he
what
died.
Time, yeah,
and what time. Mm. So initially, the report was this guy, Alistair Kinnear.
That's right,
and he said, you know, he was with Scott. He couldn't move him because he was so out of it. He'd been drinking so much. He just left him in the car,
covered him with a blanket, and went to bed.
He went to bed. Wake up the next morning. Bon Scott's like wrapped around his gear stick. His body's in a weird shape.
Yeah.
He's got bile in his mouth, and he's dead.
Yeah.
And then, of course, that story changes because the coroner report mentions no use of drugs, but drugs come up later,
right.
And no one knows what happened.
Yeah. So a few years later, there was this kind of revisit by the magazine Classic Rock magazine, and they kind of wanted to break down this mystery and find out what had happened. And it turns out that that same evening, Bon Scott was very friendly with the band UFO.
Mm-hmm.
And so the guys from UFO basically said, no, it's a different kind of story. The guy, Alistair, is supposed to have made the call at 7:45 p.m. in the evening. But the guitarist from UFO received a call from the UFO roadie at 10 a.m. in the morning. So what happened between 10 a.m. in the morning and 7:45 p.m. in the evening?
I swear, I mean, this is nearly as interesting as who shot JFK. I mean, it's one of those discussions. Bond versus Brian, of course, if you have not had enough of AC/DC, stay tuned, because at 8 o'clock we will have BFM Bootlegs AC/DC about, you know, some great, great classic tracks of AC/DC, of course, comprising of both the Brian Johnson era as well as Bon Scott.
Indeed.
So there's no issue there.
We're bringing them together.
Indeed, indeed. I mean, what I was worried about when we were doing this show is that the whole thing would be focused on the death of Bon Scott and, you know, and about how their legacy after, you know, the Bon Scott years, the Brian Johnson years. We can't do that.
Yeah, no, well, I think it's important to stick to that most important point. AC/DC for the last four decades have been making nonstop great rock and roll music.
And of course, that wraps up Treat to Treat to Rock and Roll featuring AC/DC. And of course, we're going to end it on a great track, Back in Black by AC/DC, right here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Back in Black!
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.